Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kelly, your host. Delighted to be with you on this Wednesday afternoon because it's just always great to get to be here, and we're very grateful that you allow us to do this by listening and participating and calling and, in some cases, supporting us financially. We're always grateful for that, but I'm especially grateful today because it's Flannel Panel Day. And Flannel Panel means I get to spend the next 2 hours with two very fine gentlemen. First of all, Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers. Hello, Chris Check.
Cy, I was hoping that you were going to open with that quote from our number one fan.
Oh,
who said, these three remind me of sixth graders at 2 a.m. who've had
too much Mountain Dew.
Yeah.
That's going to be our new t-shirt, by the way.
Yeah.
Join us for 2 hours. Sixth graders with too much Mountain Dew. You never saw that quote, Darren?
We need a sponsorship deal.
We do. We need a sponsorship deal.
I used to drink Mountain Dew.
I was never a Mountain Dew guy. Our other guest for the flannel panel is Joe Heschmeyer. Hi, Joe Heschmeyer.
Hey, I once drank a 2 liter of Mountain Dew at sixth grade scout camp. So that accurately
that guy nailed you. Oh my gosh, that guy nailed you.
Right bullseye got me. That was like the one time I remember drinking Mountain Dew, and I was, you know, I wanted to see if I could do the whole thing, and I was very proud of myself, and I'm deeply ashamed now.
You want to hear my sixth grade story?
I do, but I feel like I should describe what the flannel panel does before we hear everyone's sixth grade.
Wait a minute, this is exactly what we do.
Unfortunately, this is what the flannel panel does, but I should describe what the flannel panel aspires to do, which is discuss the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. And we got a lot of, we had news from all over the world, Ireland, Armenia, Rome, some from right here in the United States. It's a big 2 hours, but first we're going to hear about what Chris did in the sixth grade.
I did not attend the sixth grade.
What happened to you?
I went from grade 5 to grade 7.
You skipped a grade?
I did.
Oh,
I'm
my gosh.
It took you this long to work that in a conversation.
Well, yeah. but
no, but here's the best thing. That's all right. I did it twice for both of us. I covered you by doing sixth grade twice.
Wow, we average 1 sixth grade apiece.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. I didn't really.
It really had nothing to do with my academic acumen. My parents, God bless them, when I was a fifth grader, were wondering if, in fact, I was going to turn into a human being.
Oh, really?
And my brother Edward had already been enrolled at an Open State high school in Washington, D.C. called the Heights.
Uh-huh.
And they were very happy with the formation he was getting there. And so my parents went to the headmaster, whose name was Robert Jackson, God rest his soul, and they said, please, will you take Christopher a year early?
Because then they had hope that you would form into a human
being. And Robert Jackson said, is he as well-behaved and good a student as Edward? And my parents said, absolutely not. He's a total pain in the, I can't say that word. And he said, bring it on. We'll take him.
Oh, isn't that great?
Yeah.
That's the old days when you just went to the priest and told him, look, this kid, here's what this kid needs. Today you need a battery of tests or whatnot.
This guy was a layman. He'd been a soccer player, or what they call football, in Cornwall. He was a serious guy.
What they mistakenly call football.
Yeah. God bless my parents for doing that.
Look, they named their town after a wall of corn. So give them a little leeway to name things.
They did not name their town after a wall of corn.
I mean,
that's just you imposing that. Cornwall, isn't that where, is Cornwall where tin comes from? Is that where?
Yeah, I think so. There is tin mining there.
All right,
Joseph of Arimathea.
If you're in the UK, you're going to have to call us and let us know. Joe has a new book out called The Eucharist is Really Jesus, How Christ's Body and Blood are the Key to Everything We Believe. And Joe told us yesterday he's very happy with the reception thus far. And congratulations on that, Joe. It is a beautiful book.
Thanks. It's been really exciting to get to share it with people and seeing their reactions.
And it has what's the printing that you what it has a what kind
it's
of
got
smash
spot
printing?
Gloss.
Spot gloss.
That means
printing.
They like part of the front of the cover is very glossy, and as someone who pretty rigorously judges books by the cover, I really like it.
Yeah, it is a really nice, a very, very nice cover.
Yeah, that's the part I had the least to do with, and I'm very pleased with how that part turned
out.
So
whether you're going to read it or not, you ought to pick it up for the cover.
I got to give out the phone number because it's Flannel Panel, and one of the most fun things about Flannel Panel is not taking calls. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. We're going to, for the first time, we've never done this before, we will have a guest in a few minutes here on the Flannel Panel. I told you we're going to go all around the world today with our stories, news of the world from a Catholic perspective. And so we're going to talk a little bit about Armenia in just a bit. When I mentioned Ireland, and I have to say I was loath to do this story from Ireland, and we are going to get to it. And it's a story by Jennifer Horgan, who's an Irish writer. Writing in Ireland about Irish people
in the
stuff.
Daily, right? It was in Irish Times or what was it?
The Examiner, I think Irish Examiner.
Examiner.
I think that's the Irish Examiner and one of the four major newspapers in Ireland. I'm told. I don't know this. This is all this, but here's why I was slightly reluctant about doing this story. Last time on Flannel Panel, we talked a good deal about our friend Patrick in New York because we had accidentally not sent him the quiz, you know, the survey that we did.
Oh, because he's Irish.
No, we just forgot.
Oh, okay.
or excluded him intentionally and then pretended like we forgot. I'm not sure which. But it was Patrick that sent me this article, and I thought, we can't do two Flannel Panels in a row where we talk about Patrick from New York, because, I mean, that will become a terrible habit.
Yeah,
we'll
it's starting to look like
all that attention for Patrick
is,
in New York.
Yeah. We'll say nice things about anyone who comments about us enough, apparently.
Here's the number again, 888-318-7884, and I'm only pretending we're not really going to answer the phones today, but I just want to keep giving out the number and see if anybody calls. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, we'd love it if you get on the conversation. We just are not going to answer the phone. Here's what the story said from Ireland. All right, I'm going to give you the headline from Ireland. God is in everything, not restricted to men in robes on altars. Now, let me just ask you this. If this is an Irish person writing this.
They spell funny in that article. Is that how you spell it in Ireland, E-R?
I don't know. I was wondering about that. That must be the Irish spelling or something. I don't. Or they just terrible spellers at the Irish Examiner. I don't know. But, they spelled altars wrong.
T-R.
T-E-R.
Yeah, T-E-R.
Yeah. And of course, Joe, how should it be spelled, Joe? Like a good American?
A-L-T-A-R.
Yeah, right. So I first
they kind of altered the spelling.
Oh,
they do. They
you should have seen the look on Darren's face when you said it. Was like he was kind of like this look. Like, and there it is, Joe. Brought the thing full circle. Nicely done, Joe. Okay, what men in robes? Because I would agree with her. God is in everything, not restricted to men in robes on altars. First of all, I don't know who asserted that God was restricted to men in robes on altars, but I'm going to guess.
Men in robes on the altar?
But I'm just going to guess. She's not referring to Buddhist monks. She's not referring to Aztec priests. I think as an Irish woman, she has a particular set of priests in mind.
Yeah, I don't think it's druids either.
No, it's probably.
By the way,
but it is druids.
Don't they wear robes and do things on altars? Yeah. Druids?
Yeah.
They do.
I don't know what they do, but they do something.
Yeah.
But it's such an odd headline. God is in everything, not restricted to what? Because it does not relate. And I realize the writer does not write the headline, so I am not picking on Jennifer Horgan. We're going to do plenty of picking on Jennifer Horgan. I'm not picking on her. I'm just saying that here we have a headline, which is clearly going to be something vaguely anti-Catholic in an Irish newspaper. And they spell altar weird, and I have no idea what the headline means. It's utterly meaningless headline. But then they give you the little pull quote. All right, first, then they have a Bible, a picture of a Bible with a cross, not a crucifix, a cross, out of focus, and then they give you the pull quote. Irish people are moving forward and simultaneously back to a pantheistic world. No, excuse me, to a pantheistic way of being in the world. Are you excited about this article so far, Joe?
The imagery is just horrible. They're simultaneously moving forward and back.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, what is that supposed to evoke mentally?
Back to the Future, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, it just seems like, are they doing the splits? What's going on here?
Yeah. I think what it means is it's supposed to be a clever way of saying that if we go back in time and get rid of the way Catholic culture ruined Irish culture, we'll all be happier Irish people. I think that's what they really mean.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. It just, it's bad writing on one level. It's also it's a bad argument on another level. You know, so I'm reminded here, when I was studying philosophy, we were talking about one of the pre-Socratics, and one of the lines is that you can never step into the same river twice, meaning there's no such thing as just going back to how things were. And upon hearing this, one of the guys in the class said, wait, just get out and get back in it again. He really felt like he'd solved this. And I feel like he could have co-written this article.
I've solved that with had Cohen. All right. So, Joe, I think that you will, and I'm speaking to Joe particularly about this because...
He's Irish?
No, because he did that thing that we all tend to do on this panel. He did not prepare for the show. Chris and I read the article when I sent it around. Joe,
I feel like it makes it less authentic. People want an immediate off-the-cuff take that's poorly informed.
I think that is that's the hallmark of great radio. Talk about stuff you didn't even read. Okay, well, I got to take a break. We'll come back and we'll continue talking about the fine work of Jennifer Horgan in the Irish Examiner about how. Really, the problem that we're going to overcome as Irish people is the Catholic Church, and good for us. Right back for more discussion of that after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The most original Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
Hi, this is Doug Keck on Mother Angelica Answering the Call. Father Joseph, Mary, and I mine decades of phone calls answered by Mother Angelica. Join us Sunday for a half hour of teaching, advice, laughter, and plenty of prayers from the one and only Mother Angelica.
Mother Angelica Answering the Call, Sunday afternoon, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. It's Flannel Panel today. Chris Check here in studio with us. Joe joining us from his home studio somewhere in the Midwest. I know it's either Missouri or Kansas, but I can never remember which state he lives in.
And you got it.
It's either Missouri or Kansas.
It was one of those two, yeah.
Well, I mean, I've narrowed it down to two. I just can't remember ever which. I can never remember which one it is.
I feel safer when I know you don't know.
Oh, gee. Wait, are you afraid that I'll show up on your door?
I'm not going to get any weird hate mail or anything because you can't figure out where my address is.
888-318-7884, the number here. Online, they appear to have changed the headline on Jennifer's story, maybe because of the spelling of the word altar. But the headline now online is, "A return to our ancient faith is exactly what we need. Irish people are moving forward and simultaneously back to a pantheistic way of being in the world." Whenever someone uses the word pantheistic in such a laudatory way or attempts to be laudatory about the word pantheistic, I always think of Father Stanley Yockey and his point that pantheism, whenever and wherever it rules the world, is contrary to science, that it's not compatible with science, and that you need a Christian ethic. His whole point was that science was born of Christianity because primarily, I mean, for a lot of reasons, but primarily because Christianity is not pantheistic, that Christianity, drawing upon its Jewish roots in the Torah, sees the world as a creation, a good creation, a worthy thing to study, and that this mindset is what gave us modern science.
So one of the things our friend Jennifer here laments about the Catholic Church is that, to use her words, I was looking for the exact passage, the sacraments that have been used as blunt instruments of female oppression. And of course, and then she goes on to celebrate what she regards as... how can we say, the more sexually liberated time of the pagans. But in fact, the Catholic Church is the single institution in history that has been protecting women and men, by the way, from the misuse of the male sexual organ. It's the only one. It's the only one.
Well, and the history.
I think it was Saint Jerome. Sorry, so I'm
no. Please go ahead.
Cut you off here. I think it was Saint Jerome who talks about how Christian sexual ethics is just holding men to the standards that the world already holds women to. And I really like that way of kind of framing the issue, that women are already judged for these kind of violations. And so Christians just say, yeah, nobody should be doing that, rather than lauding men for what we condemn women for. And this is the same hypocrisy as Christianity in the West starts to unravel. We see this double standard in the 1950s, right? Like, this is what second wave feminists are picking up on, is, oh, men are getting away with this stuff, and it's kind of a nod and a wink, and women are being condemned for it. And they're right to call out that double standard, just wrong in terms of how they respond to it.
But I have to, I wonder if for the Irish, as for many Catholics in the modern world, the kind of failure of, the long failure of Catholicism to integrate itself with in the modern world in a healthy way, so that there was a kind of I certainly, from what we hear happened in Ireland, there was a kind of a retreat into clericalism rather than a bold and courageous critique from within of the modern world. You know, there was this retreat into clericalism, which actually was abusive, and so Jennifer is Horgan is referring to is a Catholicism that in recent decades, and maybe even over the last century, century and a half, two centuries, fell into bad habits that did in fact need to be reformed.
And some Jansenism, right, would we say? That's something we associate with France, but I mean, in practice, a kind of a Jansenism or almost a puritanical attitude.
Yeah, kind of puritanical Irish Catholicism, especially where everything was a sin. I mean, you know, like, right. My father always tells me about the nuns when he was a kid, telling them that if you don't use both sides of the paper, that's a sin. And that he really, you know, internalized that, like the wasting of the other. And
I'm
that's
surprised it hasn't made a comeback in the
yeah, right. That's
modern,
it was the sin
Catholic
against
left.
Mother Earth. But I you know, right. that there was this
Lenauto,
yeah,
no.
A kind of Puritanism. It was very clericalist. And so you don't want to just say, look, Ms. Horgan, you're completely blowing the history of Ireland if you think that the pantheistic past, and I'm not even convinced that there was a pantheism in Ireland before, it was a different kind of religion. But even
it
if there was.
It was animism. It wasn't pantheism.
Yeah.
I noticed that.
That brutal.
Like Irish paganism, Celtic paganism, right. Was it believed in nature gods.
Yes.
It didn't believe the universe itself was God, which is what pantheism is. So,
right.
You know, even when she's lauding the return to pantheism, she has no idea what Irish religious history actually looked like.
Right. And romanticizing the religion that came before Christianity is a horrible mistake, because it is not going to lead you to a deeper humanity or a better treatment of women or a better treatment of the environment. It's like people, I'll be frank with you. It's like people who say, if we could just, you know, like treat the earth the way Native American people treated the earth. You mean the annual burning of the Great Plains? Like, are we going back to that? Are we going to hunt the giants?
Driving herds and herds of buffalo
off
of the
cliffs? Yeah. Are we going to hunt the giant sloth to extinction? I mean, this romanticizing of the pre-Christian era doesn't do anybody any good, because Native American people were abused by Christian people. They were, but that romanticism of the past is you're just lying to yourself. You're imposing a second lie.
Yeah, right. the peaceful bucolic Aztecs, for example.
Yeah,
ripping
right.
out the hearts of
a long history in this show of of getting angry calls about the Aztecs.
Yeah, right.
I'm just going to say, yeah, it's actually really trivializing and tokenizing, right? Like,
yeah,
when you reduce the complex history of a people to a two-dimensional Hallmark movie, everybody's got a messy history.
Sure.
Every right. religion, every culture, every nationality. And so when you see that all that nuance stripped away and you can't get the basics right between animism and pantheism, I pulled this article up during the conversation because I'm good at following along and found this howler of acclaim. She writes, as late as the 1970s, the figure of people attending Mass was 92% or so. But back in the 1830s, the figure was something like 30%. And I have to wonder if she knows literally anything
about her own
Irish history.
Yeah. Because why was no? Acts, right? Why would
what
people not be going to Mass
say,
in the early
90 and 1829? Oh, Catholicism Oliver, was outlawed in Ireland.
Yeah, Oliver right. Cromwell.
Right.
They take a year after the legalization of Catholicism and say a third of the country's at Mass. That's amazing.
Right.
Because yeah. they had done everything they could to make that number zero.
Yeah.
For a century and a half.
Well, there were a good number who tried to make the number of Irish Catholics zero. I mean, well, yes. not just don't
right.
go to Mass,
yeah.
just
yes.
don't be. So, right. and that and those kinds of violence and oppression and brutality, they do have consequences on a culture. And Irish culture does have a really ugly history of clericalism, abuse, along with its also beautiful history. So I don't want to just say, look, you know, Ms. Horgan, none of this is true. But the generalizations, I think, and the romanticization are deadly. They ruin her argument, and they make her argument utterly pointless.
And so, and as Joe observes, sort of trivial, what interests me about Ireland interests me also about places like Spain or Italy, for example, places where that we have traditionally associated with a flourishing of the faith, or historically associated. But the reality is that some places don't come back. They Quebec, for
yeah,
example.
Right.
Some places do not come back. North Africa, to go deep into history, to come up with an example. And puzzling over why I think is as valuable, and there are probably different reasons. Certainly, the introduction of the contraceptive pill and its effect in places like Italy and Spain, and its effect on the faith. But there are revolutions there in Italy, the Risorgimento and the Spanish Civil War in the early 20th century, and of course these things. Mexico was a vibrant, the most vibrant Christian country in this hemisphere. And it's really very much struggling in terms of the faith right now.
Some places do. 100 years.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got this very long and messy the past century. You've got a civil war in Mexico between different Masons.
Yes.
I mean, it was just an incredible role that this plays in terms of introducing these very deeply anti-Catholic ideas. So, I mean, to be sure, there is a long history in places where the Catholic Church gets comfortable. That institutionalism and human
right.
sin
right.
really alienates and disgusts people, and there's a pushback against that. It's something we should be perennially on guard against. But we still risk, in telling that story, making it too dimensional. I mean, there's also an incredible story. Who is it? Father Charles O'Neill, the guy who wrote Foggy Dew. You've got Father John Murphy, who helped lead the uprising in 1798 against the British. I mean, one of the reasons I think Ireland tend to be more clericalist is there were a lot of inspiring priests who helped lead the Irish people through a difficult time where to be a Catholic priest was literally a capital crime. And so they were these potential martyrs who were leading the people. And of course, people were going to rally around that. Now, their descendants were often beneficiaries of this respect and honor that maybe they didn't earn and maybe they got too comfortable and complacent with. But it is a much more nuanced story than just paganism or pantheism or animism good, Catholicism bad.
Yeah, but there is the other side of it too, is not just that I wouldn't see this article just as a reaction against the Catholic Church, but also against the kind of pointless mechanism of modern life in modern cities, in modern businesses. You know, Ireland is famous for the Irish Tiger, and okay, great, congratulations, you did great, but now you have the same enemy that the rest of the developed world has. You got to show up to work at a certain time, and now clocks rule your life, and technology rules your life. And so there is a kind of desire for, let's celebrate Samhain again. You know, we'll go back, and which is a past in large part, which is just made up by often made up by academics because there is no written history of that stuff, or the stuff that is written was written down only by Catholic monks and nuns, and so you read a fake history into that the history that they wrote down.
Right. I mean, it you're right, and I think in addition to that, well, not to get too much on to Chris's hobby horse, but a lot of the story of Ireland's breakdown in the faith isn't just contraception. It's also getting economically comfortable.
Sure.
That it really is the Irish tiger that does a lot of damage to the faith, because people became from Catholic to capitalist.
Yeah.
And so in as much as she finds that deeply unsatisfying.
Or from rural to urban, right. By the way.
Yeah.
Right. In which she mentions that in the piece.
Yeah. Right. But there is something, there is a different way of life. You know, like Larry Chapp is looking for it in the Catholic worker movement. And there are people, and that would be a helpful conversation maybe to have with her. We got to take a quick break. We're going to come right back and we'll talk a little bit about Armenia now that we've done our damage to Ireland.
Are you ready to defend your faith in a world of unbelief? Join us at the 9th Annual Catholic Answers Apologetics Conference. This year's theme, I Believe in God. And it'll help you provide clear and charitable answers to atheism, agnosticism, and plain old indifference. Don't miss what promises to be the event of the season. Join us in San Diego from September 21st through 24th as we welcome our special guest, Dr. Scott Hahn, and an all-star lineup of great Catholic speakers. Spend quality time with your favorite Catholic Answers apologists and enjoy 4 days of fun, fellowship, and adoration of the Almighty. Seats are still available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 888-291-8000 to register. Enter promo code EARLY and save $50. That's CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to CASociety315.com and join today.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity. In the early church was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What struggles have you faced with your adult kids?
What did you overcome, and how did God work in those situations?
Share your story tomorrow on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie on most of these EWTN stations.
And now back to Catholic Answers Live with Cy Kellett.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks to Patrick Sweeney for the story idea and for sending the story. He says he was in Ireland when he sent it. So we'll see in a few weeks out here in California, Patrick. Right now, we're going to talk a little bit about Armenia. One of the things that Catholic media can do, and I have been a believer in this in a long time, and I sometimes am frustrated with Catholic media when we just get in the same echo chamber. You know, we add our Catholic piece, but we don't introduce stories that are missed in the other media. One of the things we can do, and EWTN News is at their best, I think, when they're doing it, or the National Catholic Register or Reporter or wherever you want to go, left, right, whatever. Catholic media can be alternate media, and it should be alternate media. And one of the stories that we're not being told about is not making it into the kind of onto the editorial sheet that the entire Western media uses is the situation of Christians in Armenia. And so this is our first guest we've ever had on the flannel panel. I can't currently see you, Simone, so I don't know if she's wearing
she is.
Something.
Oh, that is kind of flannel.
That's gingham. It's not a gingham.
Gingham.
It's not a gingham panel.
Flannel adjacent.
All right.
The best I could do.
Simone Riscala is our guest. Simone
from
Endow Groups. thanks for being here with us. Now, Simone, I often introduce you as Egyptian, and you often use our airtime when you're here to talk about how everything in the East is better than everything in the West. And I think of you and your family as being from Egypt. But they were in Egypt because they were no longer able to stay in Armenia during the genocide, right?
Yes, exactly. So we just had to hang out in Egypt for about a century before coming to the United States. And yes, my maternal grandmother's, my great-grandfather basically had a kind Turkish neighbor that said, there's going to be a lot of bloodshed around here. You need to probably leave. So they did, and that's why we ended up in Egypt. So we're Armenians in the diaspora of Cairo. So there are more Armenians outside of Armenia than there are in Armenia proper.
So I'm grateful that you began the segment with Simone by mentioning the genocide, because the particular topic that we want to talk about today, the fighting that continues there, is part of this century-long conflict. I would hazard a guess that a lot of our listeners are largely ignorant or only peripherally aware of the history, or even, for example, where Armenia is on a map,
right,
at the very eastern end of Turkey as Turkey approaches the Caucasus there. In the expansion of modern Turkey, Simone will give the better details than I, some 1.5 million or more Armenians lost their lives to Ataturk's plan to expand eastward and kind of create a sort of this pan-Turkish world towards the Caucasus. Did I summarize it pretty well, Simone?
You did. There were planned campaigns and massacres of the Armenians from about the 1890s to the 1920s. The genocide that's known as the Armenian Genocide, which, Chris, I know you're a huge lover of history. The word genocide was coined because of what happened to the Armenians during World War I. And later, Hitler was asked, how are you going to get away with the Jewish Holocaust? And he said, well, who remembers the Armenians?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
If
you want a good movie about this that isn't too dark, it's really about the beginning, like the 1890s end of this, but Elia Kazan's America,
yeah,
from the early 1960s, I think 1963, is a fantastic movie.
And by the way, a great filmmaker.
Well,
get on the waterfront.
Yeah. When did Christianity come to Armenia? How did it end up a Christian country in the 19th century?
The first Christian country.
Yeah. Yeah, the first Christian nation. So we're very, very proud of that. Armenia declared Christianity its state religion in 301 AD, which—
Take that, Constantine.
I know, I'm so proud of it. I'm so proud. I mean, there's no Armenian that isn't so proud that, in fact, Noah's Ark landed in Mount Ararat. So it's like everyone's kind of Armenian. Noah's Ark landed in Mount Ararat, which is an ancient Armenia.
Right, so we're all immigrants out of Armenia then.
We're all Armenian.
Yeah.
All of us are Armenian. and then in 301, St. Gregory the Illuminator converted the king to Christianity and baptized him. And then the nation became Christian, which was a decade before Christianity was even legalized in the Roman Empire through the Edict of Milan. So, you know, we're very proud to be Christian. And being Christian is part of the problem of what's happening now, which is a threat of a second genocide.
Can I make a quick apologetic point here?
Yeah.
Since this is kind of what we do. This is worth pointing out when people have all these weird conspiracy theories about Constantine, about him creating Christianity and you know, making up which things we're going to believe as Christians and all this. Is outside of the Roman Empire, there's already a Christian country with Christianity as the state religion. And it had the better part of 300 years of history under its belt, and Constantine didn't have any control over it. So
right,
it really dispels that kind of myth. I mean, there's other places, India as well, but this is one that's right there in kind of a glaring history.
You might not know this.
I love that point.
If this is not, I just am curious, is there an association of an apostle with Armenia? Did any of the apostles go there, or do we
There yes, St. Jude Thaddeus.
St. Jude. That's the good one, by the way. If anybody's wondering which St. Jude that is.
That's the good one.
That's the good Jude. Yeah.
St. Jude and St. Bartholomew are associated with Armenia.
Yes. Ah, how wonderful.
And he is a patron of impossible. And Armenia, the fact that we're still around after all these massacres and invasions, well, no wonder it was St. Jude. So.
I'm always amazed at people who will say, well, that Christianity is essentially a European religion. And not understand that there's a reason why Christianity is not in Turkey and in Syria, where it basically was founded. You know, it's not in large parts of Egypt. It's certainly not the majority. It's not in Saudi Arabia. Why is it not in these places? There's a historical reason for that. And Ataturk was being quite consistent with some of that history when he decided that the Turks needed Armenia and the Armenian Christians could go.
Yeah, I mean, look, not all wars are just about faith, but certainly religion is a huge part of the Armenian story. And Armenians have a very resilient attitude, very anti-authoritarian. Joe Heschmeyer knows my mother, you know, and he can verify that.
I can't believe you're bringing me into a family conflict on national
on
radio.
On the air. Yeah. I know. But there is that Armenian spirit that will not give up our Christianity.
So tell us what's going on today. Who are the players and what's going on in Armenia today?
Yeah. So, you know, the genocide, you know, World War I. Now, you know, look, backtrack a little bit. In 2020, there was a 44-day war. It was the Azerbaijan that unprovoked started to attack an ethnic region. It's not Armenia proper. It's called the Nagorno-Karabakh region. And Armenians know it as Artsakh. And it is ethnically Armenian. There's 120,000 Armenians who live there. So it's its own independent republic.
So Simone, let me interrupt you just quickly and correct me if I'm wrong. It's also a region almost where we locate the origins of our Armenian Christianity. It's like Kosovo is to the Serbs. Is that a fair way to describe it?
Yes, there are many monasteries there. The Armenian alphabet started in Artsakh and the Nagorno-Karabakh. So it's significant. It's a significant part of Armenian history. It was part of Armenian territory. It's ethnically Armenian, you know. So yes, you are correct in that, Chris. But because of complicated post-Soviet history, it was... it's a disputed territory.
Well, although Stalin actually recognized it as a territory, right?
He was Georgian, right?
So he actually knew a little bit more about the kind of complicated history in the Caucasus than most.
Right, because he's Georgian.
But he put it under Azeri jurisdiction, so to speak. So that's why it's its own thing, but it's a bit complicated.
Sure.
And then in the 90s, Armenia, there was the first Nagorno-Karabakh war, Armenian victory. And then in 2020, the second Nagorno-Karabakh war, again, unprovoked aggression of Azerbaijan against Armenians. And that war led to a lot of Armenian casualties. And they did, this is very unfortunate, did gain territory in the Nagorno-Karabakh, which of course included ancient Christian monasteries. So it's very sad. And then last December, the Azeris have put a blockade in the Lachin Corridor, which is the only road that connects Armenia proper with Artsakh, with Nagorno-Karabakh. So the blockade, which has been going on now, it's almost in its eighth month, has left people starving, without gas, without fuel, without access to medical supplies. And this is a real crisis. And like you mentioned, Sai, it is getting very little media coverage.
Well, and the American foreign policy in this case tends to favor Azerbaijan. It is true that Joe Biden is the first American president formally to call in the Congress of the United States the Armenian Genocide a genocide. However, he continues under his administration and as Secretary of State to sell weapons to Azerbaijan. There's a provision that says that the Secretary of State has to say that these weapons are not going to be used in human rights violations, but it seems impossible for me to even know how someone would establish that. But the United States arms Azerbaijan, and the parallels here, I keep coming back to Serbia, it's the story I know better, but we armed Albanian Muslims to fight Serbian Christians in Kosovo. Under the Clinton administration, and the same sort of thing is going on. So our foreign policy, I think, here is not driven at all by a concern for human rights, much less a concern for Christians, but how we're sort of positioned in the region against Russia.
Yeah, it does.
And Simone, I'm glad you're on because you're not. My knowledge of this is very cursory, but I'm just trying to give a summary here for our listeners for whom a lot of this may still be opaque.
I know that there's a kind of if you believe American media, then the absolute worst people in the world are Russians, and so anybody who's containing Russia or confronting Russia, it's obvious. It's just kind of silly propaganda if you actually consider the situation in the world today. But we're supposed to hate the Russians. And so what does that mean for Armenia?
Well, supposedly the Russians are the peace is in charge of the Lachin corridor. They're the peacekeepers, so to speak. But right now, Russia is not really a friend to Armenia. So it's right, and I think this is where Chris, your point about the Biden administration, as yes, there was recognition, but right now, two children died last week because their mom went out searching for food to feed them and couldn't feed them, and so they died of exhaustion. There are women right now who are pregnant who are not getting the prenatal care they need. There isn't electricity that keeping all the incubators open for all the premature babies. I mean, these are like stories and stories of stories I can tell you. So what we need to do is to hold Azerbaijan accountable. If we're going to give them aid, we have to demand that they don't use the aid to attack Armenia, which is exactly what they're doing.
The president of Azerbaijan, Aliyev, is that how you say it?
Aliyev.
He is. He very much is public about his sort of the scoundrel nature of his personality. He refers to the Armenians as dogs. He's set up these parks in the cities of Azerbaijan where they display the helmets of killed Armenian soldiers, sort of as kind of like trophy parks.
Yeah,
there's a sneering quality about the man.
Yes, there is. The pictures are very interesting when you see Aliyev with the Prime Minister of Armenia, Pashinyan, this kind of like a smug little look. But I mean, it's not as though Turkey and Azerbaijan are hiding the fact that they want Armenia. Armenia is the only thing getting in the way of what you were talking about, Chris, in terms of like pan-Turkism. I mean, it's a Christian country landlocked among four Islamic countries.
Yeah, no,
that gets right to the question I was wondering, which is what is the strategic interest? Like, why not just leave people alone? Why are they fighting this viciously over what is ultimately a very small piece of land in the scheme of things?
I'll tell you what, Simone, because I've neglected to go to the break. Can we get that when we come back? We get an answer to that when we come back? Okay. We're our good friend, Simone Riscala. You know her here because she comes on, does open forum with us. Wonderful shows about suffering we recently did with Simone. She works with the Endow Groups. But here today to talk to us about the situation in Armenia, a place her own family had to leave because of the Armenian genocide perpetrated by the Turks in the early part of the last century. We'll come back and we'll get some more answers from Simone right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Want the latest pro-life news? Want it delivered? Sign up. It's free. EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, your source for everything happening now in the fight to protect the sanctity of human life. New episodes delivered every week to your inbox. So if you really want to know,
sign up today.
Go to EWTN.com/pro-life today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's Flannel Panel today, the news of the world from a Catholic perspective. As I said before, I do have a strong view that Catholic media should be used to talk about stories that are not being talked about, not just to have opinions about stories that everyone's already talking about. And one of the stories not being talked about in the world today is the predicament of the world's oldest Christian country, Armenia, which has found itself under attack from its neighbor, Azerbaijan, attack that is reminiscent of and is also related to the ongoing oppression of the Armenian people that I couldn't tell you when it began, but it's been going on for a long, long time. Simone Riscala, our guest, her family spent, she said, how did you say it? We hung out in Egypt for a century.
For like about 100 years.
Yeah.
You're very young looking, which is, given that.
I believe you share that with that same phrase with the Hebrew people, although it may have been more than a century in their turn. But occasionally people have to spend a century or two in Egypt while things get worked out in their country. But Joe asked you a question about why this little place, Armenia, is drawing so much international attention and such violent attention.
Well, yeah, not even just Armenia itself, but the particular land within the kind of Azerbaijan.
Azerbaijan is very rich in natural gas. Armenia, not so much, though. I mean, there aren't really like a lot of resources there.
Yes, that is very true. I can't recall at the moment if Nagorno-Karabakh, aka Artsakh, has natural gases, but certainly Azerbaijan does. Armenia, again, it's a small country. It's 3 million people. There's nothing economically like benefit. You know, all the gas resources are in Azerbaijan. So it's what I mentioned earlier. It's the Christian thing. It is one explanation for it. There's a American Armenian journalist, Lara Satrakian, who asked one of her Turkish friends, you know, is it true? There's a phrase in Turkish that calls Armenians leftovers of the sword. Is that true? Do Turks really use that phrase? And they said, yes, sorry, that is a phrase that is used. So part of the, and I think, Chris, we were talking earlier about, Erdogan on
Erdogan said that what is underway now in Artsakh and in Armenia is a fulfillment of the efforts of our grandfathers in the Caucasus, and that refers, of course, to the efforts of modern Turkey to create sort of this pan-Turkish world east, and in fact challenge Russia for hegemony in the region.
Yes.
But I very much wish to underscore and keep coming back to the Islamic Christian conflict and the ISIS style beheadings that are going on of captured Armenian soldiers, for example, are evidence of this. This is a religious conflict. And as everyone has observed, all of these religious conflicts, even, you know, we talk about the Battle of Lepanto a lot. I know I do. This is bound up in the trade politics of the Mediterranean world in the 16th century. But that was a religious conflict, and this one very much is as well. And it has been for, a century and a half or more.
Yes, and it's the president of Philos, Robert Nicholson, often refers to Armenia as the, you know, the westernmost, what is the phrase, the easternmost Western nation. And Armenia is a democracy. It has Western values. It has an affinity for Europe. It's Christian. So it's not just like, oh, there's this like one little region that's like, you know, getting in the way of like this one big, you know, pan-Turkic empire or whatnot, but also that is also closely related to the Christian thing.
We're very limited on time, so I do want to ask you about what people can do. I'm going to give you a chance to talk about what people can do, because we're going to come up to the end of our first hour of Flannel Panel. I want to give people one more reason to care. I mean, if it's not, you know, this is the world's oldest Christian country. This is a small country, a country that's been abused for centuries, but also the Kardashians are Armenian. So if that helps, if that motivates you at all, please use that as a motivator. So now what can people do? Simone.
Yes. Well, I'll start off the call to actions with one, remembering also that that there are, you know, this is a Catholic media outlet, that there are Armenian Catholics. I'm one of them. One of the most recent doctors of the church is St. Gregory of Narek. So there's a lot I want to kind of, we don't have time for it, but I want to talk about Armenian spirituality with Christianity. But Americans in particular, and American Christians in particular, the first human rights campaign in this country was for the Armenians. And you know, President Hoover is on record for saying that the name Armenia was on the front of the minds and on the lips of everyone, of even Armenian children. So this country should be proud of the relief that it sent to Armenians. And, you know, in the beginning of the century, J.D. Rockefeller convinced Clara Barton to take the Red Cross overseas. And the first campaign of the Red Cross overseas was to Armenia. Now Azerbaijan is denying the Red Cross entrance into the Nagorno-Karabakh. So with that being said, we should be proud of our American history when it comes to Armenians, and also reawaken that story. But first, of course, I have to say to pray. But second, please tell the story of what's happening now, because it's not getting media coverage. Put pressure on the Biden administration. There's a resolution out that's calling for to end the blockade and also to hold Azerbaijan accountable for not using that aid to attack Armenians. And also, yeah, and for people who are social media savvy, hashtag Save Armenia. Please get the word out. Go to philosproject.org/Armenia. Sign up for updates, please.
Can you spell Philos Project?
Yeah, Philos, Philos Project, philosproject.org. /Armenia. You can sign up for a newsletter that's going to keep you updated, not just educate you in Armenia, but keep you updated on current events and how you can help.
Can I add a recommendation? Our friend, yes. Rusty Reno, who edits First Things, he's been having a fellow now for a decade or more. Mark Movsesian is his name.
Yes.
And if you, yes. And if you just went, my friends, if you did nothing else, pray and fast, write a check, to relief, but you want to educate yourself, go to First Things, put Armenia in the search box, and Mark Movsesian has got about a half a dozen articles there, and they are clear, they're excellent primers. They will give you not only the background information, but also they really, they're indictments of American foreign policy and what the neoconservatives have tried to design here in opposition to Russia, and he does a superb job.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Simone. Thank you so much for digging out a gingham shirt that approximates flannel and being on with us.
I'm so grateful.
We'll send you a proper flannel shirt, Simone.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. And on behalf of all Armenians and people who cherish Western values, really appreciate it.
God bless you.
We're going to continue with Flannel Panel. We'll evaluate Simone's performance when we come back. She's the first guest we've ever had on Flannel Panel. We're going to have to have a conversation about should we do that again, or was that a one-time thing? Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. He'll continue here with us. Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers, is a guest. I am Cy Kellett. We're going to continue bringing you the news of the world from a Catholic
perspective
while wearing flannel shirts right after this.
And news about Rome.
Oh, yeah, and news about us going to Rome. And once again, thank you, Simone Riscala. Appreciate it. Look forward to talking with you again. Right back. More Flannel Panel after this.